Hello, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, J. Patrick Hooligan. You can read my columns in the Las Vegas Sun and Las Vegas Weekly. My co-host, as always, Tovin LePan, staff writer for the Las Vegas Sun. For years, the Latino electorate in Nevada was known as the sleeping giant. One-fourth of Nevada is Hispanic, according to a recent census, but for years, Hispanic voters didn't make their voices heard as much as they might have. That changed in 2008 and again in 2010, when Hispanics became a crucial part of the Democratic coalitions that helped elect Barack Obama and re-elect Harry Reid in 2010. Given the lackluster economy and the Democrats' inability to get comprehensive immigration reform passed, will Hispanics again come out in big numbers to support Obama's re-election and Democratic Senate candidate Shelley Berkley, or will they stay home or perhaps even switch their allegiance to Mitt Romney, Dean Heller, and other Republicans, hoping a Republican Washington will finally get the economy turned around? Joining us to discuss Hispanic politics are Dave DeMore, a UNLV political scientist, and Leo Murrieta, Nevada director of Mi Familia Vota, a Latino civic engagement group. Dave, you've been here a long time, and you watched cycle after cycle when it was a thought that Latino voters would finally show up and help one party or the other. And it never seemed to happen, or it was only happening incrementally, but that really changed in 2008 and 2010. Tell us a little bit about that history.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there, that the expectation was always you'd have some sort of explosion, right? That there'd be this huge mobilization of Latino voters, but that's not really how it worked. Across the country, not just in Nevada, you see just gradual incremental upticks every electoral cycle, largely stemming from the amount of outreach and the right amount of mobilization. You've also seen another factor I think is important here, and that is the emergence of Latino candidates for lower level offices as well as some statewide level offices here. So now you have some sense of symbolic representation in the Latino community, which I think is also very, very important to help with that socialization process.
And hey, Leo, if you could give us your on-the-ground impressions of those two election cycles in 2008 and then the midterm elections in 2010.
Yeah, definitely. And thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. The Latino community, the Hispanic voter in 2008 really became motivated because we had, like David said, we had individuals in the community who were helping to lead the charge. We had local grown heroes who were running for office. We had people running for the state legislature who were out there knocking on doors. You had the first concerted effort to get out the Latino vote. In 2008, and in 2010, the Latino community really educated themselves on what was going on and how elections can affect the lives of not just them, but their communities and their families. So I think that 2008 really kicked us out of hibernation. 2010 was just a continued exercise in our strength, and I'm confident that we're going to see the same in 2012.
Republicans, and especially George W. Bush, they did a good job competing for Hispanic votes in the past. And one would think that given the falling economic fortunes of Hispanics the last 5 years, that Republicans could compete again. But they haven't shown much love to Latinos the past few years. Dave, it seems to me that Republicans are under the delusion that people will vote for you even if you insult them and their relatives. Could you just review for us the recent history and what would be causing them to kind of shoot themselves in the foot?
Well, yeah, I think you raise a good point. Going back to the debate over comprehensive immigration at the end of the Bush term, in the Bush political operation, they saw the future. They saw it in swing states. They saw it in the Southwest, that this growing block of voters here who were more or less unaffiliated strongly with either party, that they could be mobilized there. And that's why they put so much into comprehensive immigration reform.
They saw it in Texas.
They saw it in Texas, absolutely.
Even in a couple cycles from now, Texas could be a swing
absolutely.
State.
Absolutely. You know, Arizona, Colorado here, obviously. Mm-hmm. And obviously, California would be the big prize, which they can't compete statewide in. Republicans can't anymore there. So what's happened since that sort of fell apart in the Senate is you've seen the emergence of the conservative base in the Republican Party. And that has more or less been a approach to immigration that has largely just been about enforcement, no discussion about how do you get 11 million people who are already here into the process and so on and so forth here. So you've seen very, very harsh rhetoric there. And certainly, yeah, the economic data doesn't bode well for the Democrats, but that assumes that that's the only issue that Latinos care about there. Mm-hmm. And some of the polling from Latino Decision shows that, yeah, certainly the economy is a big, the number one issue, but immigration's not too far behind among a lot of Latino voters there. And you look at some of the rhetoric that Mitt Romney put out during the campaign, you know, talking about the DREAM Act and some of the other small bits of legislation that have been talked about, knowing that comprehensive immigration is probably off the board for a while, and you just don't see much compassion there in the base. You do mm-hmm. see individual candidates trying to sort of moderate a little bit there, but the message that I think the Republicans send here is, you know, we're somewhat hostile in our rhetoric there.
Uh-huh. And I think you also saw this with the nomination of Judge Sotomayor to the Supreme Court. That was probably a significant milestone, and there was a lot of rather condescending rhetoric used to describe her.
Mm-hmm. And if you go back to just in Nevada, right, at the Republican state convention, right, where the crowd cheers when they say we're not going to have any materials printed in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's sort of the base mindset there. And you look at, you know, someone like Dean Heller trying to moderate a little bit. He's got a Spanish language website and done some outreach there.
Mm-hmm. And Sharon Angle was a disaster.
And Sharon Angle, of course, also, yeah, she was a disaster with her ads. So, you know, that, you know, people don't forget. Mm-hmm. Just because the economy is bad doesn't mean, oh, we're going to abandon ship from the Democrats there.
Mm-hmm. Leo, tell us about your interactions with voters. Is that the impression you get with Latino voters, that rhetoric starts to take a toll?
Well, and again, me familiar with it, we're a nonpartisan civic engagement organization.
Of course, of course.
Being on the ground and being nonpartisan, we get to talk to people exactly where they are. Instead of pushing a political party or a candidate onto them, we get to talk to them about the issues that affect, you know, their kitchen table. And they are concerned about the way that elected officials and politicians and candidates stereotype the community. When you have a candidate for the office of the President of the United States saying that people come over across this border with no skills, no education, no talent, when in fact that's not true. A lot of Latino Americans and Latinos come to this country with education, with qualified skills, and you know they have skills that this country needs, and it's called agriculture, it's called education, it's called, you know, we have a wide array of talents and skills, and when the community sees this, you know, we have people who respond. We have young people who see that education needs to be valued, and we have parents who see the same thing. When they hear individuals talking about cutting education and cutting teachers, schools, you know, roads, jobs, and health care, these are issues that affect our community. So it's not just the anti-immigrant rhetoric. It's not just the anti-Latino rhetoric. It's about the issues that directly affect our families, our communities, and you know, our daily lives. So when candidates go out there and talk about being against the DREAM Act, they're not paying themselves any favors. But also, they can't ignore the fact that Latinos are concerned about jobs and the economy. We're concerned about the housing crisis. We're concerned about the quality of education and healthcare, because all of those things tie into the prosperity of our families. So people can't paint a pretty picture when they talk about immigration and say, "I don't want to deport you," but then when they talk about cutting education, cutting jobs, cutting, you know, outsourcing jobs, Latinos are paying attention to that as well.
And speaking to the issues of the DREAM Act and staying on it, which, I mean, we recently had President Obama's decision to defer action on the so-called Dreamer group, and then also there was the Supreme Court decision on SB 1070, which the government semi-successfully challenged, you know, with one provision upheld. And so how has that shown up in the polling, David, in terms of
about how you'd expect, about how you expect. Again, I'm using Latino Decision's data here, is overwhelming support for Obama's actions on the Dreamers, and not a lot of support for the Supreme Court. Kind of a bit of a half loaf with how that decision was handed down there. You know, and I think Leo makes a good point about education, access to education. I mean, that's kind of a cornerstone of the American dream here. And, you know, UNLV, where I teach, we have a I think it's the papers that a 46% minority students there. I was on a program after the Obama announcement, and one of my students out there turned out to be an authorized immigrant. I didn't even know that because, you know, she was just in the classroom there. They do have access in Nevada, but it's not uniform. There's no way to fund, you know, they can't get access to federal dollars. They can't get access to Millennium Scholarship in Nevada there. So that those issues resonate here because, I mean, a lot of hardworking Latinos, they want their kids to have the better life, and everybody knows in America that means access to education.
And I should say the estimates say that there's about 30,000 DREAM Act eligible students or young people here in Nevada.
Leo, how are voters you talk to reacting to this recent spate of news on Supreme Court SB 270 and Obama's decision, his executive order on the mini DREAM?
Both of those instances were, one was very, very positive news for our community. It was great news. And the other one was bittersweet. And they're very different reactions to each one. When the deferred action announcement came out, there was just joy throughout the community. You know, I myself am a naturalized citizen. And as a Latino, the one issue that all of our families deal with is immigration. I myself have almost every instance of immigration in my close, you know, immediate family, except for young people who are undocumented. So when this news came out, we were at the grocery stores, we were at the DMVs, like we were out in the community, and people were excited. People were excited to apply and for their students and for their kids. And Dreamers were worried, they were nervous, but they were excited. They figured, this is finally relief that we need. The community was overall just overwhelmed with joy at this announcement. And when with the decision of SB 1070, essentially it was bittersweet because three of the components were devastating. They were terrible components of the law, and I couldn't believe that they were even part of the law, and I thought I knew all about the law. But the one component that stayed is the part that is concerning people. It's the racial profiling aspect and the possibility of that type of law, particularly the show me your papers aspect of the law.
I'll just clarify that the court decided that the police do, in fact, have the right to ask for identification, citizenship, and immigration papers if they have a quote-unquote reasonable suspicion that a person is here illegally.
Absolutely, yeah. And thank you for clarifying that. And that's exactly why, you know, voters and just people in the community are concerned about it, because the Supreme Court of the United States upheld that local law enforcement can essentially ask someone to prove their status just because they suspect that they look undocumented. Well, working in the community every day, there's no way to tell who is undocumented without. You know, even what do you say, someone who's very dark-skinned or someone who doesn't speak English? My parents, when we came to this country as legal permanent residents in 1986, my parents didn't speak English until the early to mid-90s. It took them over 10 years to learn the language fully. And so my parents may have been asked for their papers because they didn't speak English.
So that decision is another motivator for Latino voters?
And you know what? It definitely is. But what we've seen is that people are starting to get concerned with the local election, with Carson City. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to make sure that the people who they're going to send and eventually vote for aren't going to support a law like SB 1070 coming to Nevada.
And they don't want a Sheriff Joe Arpaio.
Absolutely not. And thank goodness we don't have one. You know, we have a great sheriff here in Clark County. You know, whatever the issues are with use of force, the programs that we currently have, Secure Communities and 287G, thankfully they've been exercised, you know, without discrimination, that kind of deal. It hasn't been an excess that we've seen in other states. And so our local community, if we participate and we elect individuals who, you know, Republican or Democrat, who will voice their opposition to these types of laws, and these types of efforts, you know, they can count on the Latino vote. You know, so because that, even though immigration isn't our number one concern, our children are, and our children look Latino. So that's our issue.
All right, you're listening to KUNV 91.5, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Patrick Kulikin. My co-host is Tobin Lepan. We're joined today by Leo Morietta, Nevada director of La Familia Vota, and UNLV political scientist Dave DeMore. I want to ask you both, Dave, we'll start with you, about the Culinary Union, the local union that represents workers on the Las Vegas Strip, more than 50,000 of them. Traditionally has been a very important political force for registering and turnout the vote efforts for Hispanics. D. Taylor, the secretary treasurer of Culinary, has said that the Culinary is more or less sitting out this election. They were important supporters of President Obama in 2008, both in the caucus here and in the general election. But they are engaged in contract talks with the Strip hotels, and also they are trying to unionize station casinos in a long-running battle there. Do you believe him when he says that, and how important could that be?
Good question, good question. I think there's a lot of sort of anger among labor unions, twofold. I mean, the local level, obviously the organization of station casinos, I don't think they feel the Democrats have been quite as supportive as they would have wanted them to be.
Because Democrats have taken the money from the corporate donations, absolutely.
Yeah. And at the national level, I think there was an expectation after the 2010 election for card check.
2008 election.
Yeah, it should be 2008, when you had unified Democratic control.
Make it easier to unionize workers.
Absolutely. And that did not move anywhere in Congress there.
Right.
Now, this is a little bit of a risk, right? Because if you go back to 1994, right, the last time unions sat out the election, quote unquote, right?
Uh-huh.
In 1992, they were upset with Bill Clinton for passing NAFTA. 1994, what happens, right? Republicans sweep Congress there, and then they end up in a much, much worse position there.
Right.
So it's,
don't have a whole lot of leverage.
They don't have a lot of leverage on this, but, you know, at the same time, how passionate are they going to be for Obama? Probably not as passionate as they were for 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Are they going to tell their voters not to, tell their members not to vote? Probably not.
Right.
But the question is, are they going to do door knocking? Are they going to do some of the other activities that they have done? And interesting, right, one of the outcomes of Citizens United is they have more autonomy in how they actually use their resources during the campaigns.
Uh-huh.
So it's an interesting detail. He's been quite outspoken that. He's read a couple of interviews he's had basically making that point that Democrats really haven't been there for us here,
uh-huh.
so why should we be there for them?
Right. He has also said, though, that a Romney administration would be a nightmare.
Absolutely.
And Romney's been vocal about his animosity.
Collective bargaining, yeah. all those types of things yeah. there. So, you know, we'll see. I guess we won't be able to answer that until November.
Leo, do you have any sense of it?
Absolutely. Myself, my parents, when we came to this country, they were both part of the Culinary Union. My father for over a dozen years and my mother for about 8 years. And my mother knew President Klein back when Ms. Gioconda was worked back in the hotels. And so the people that we speak with, they're culinary members, they're union members. And if you have D. Taylor out there saying that they're not going to participate, they're in the fight of their lives to make sure that the members of their union have a livable wage, have access to, you know, quality health care and job security. And again, all of those things tie into education, jobs, and health care. And these are issues that are important to our community. And we get it. You know, the people that we talk to at the doors, the people that we talk to at the stores, they understand what's going on with culinary. They understand that, you know, a good majority of Latino households in the state are, you know, they're union households, whether they're culinary, whether they're another labor union. This community is really tied into the struggle for the middle class and the American dream for the Latino community, and the Hispanic American dream is just like anyone else's. And so these are issues that the voters are going to understand, and they're going to understand that they need to get informed.
But just let me follow up, though. I mean, will culinary play in this election or not? Will they play an important role?
Their advocacy to get out their members and keeping the fight alive for workers' rights, the byproduct will be participation. You know, raising the awareness within their membership about the fights that they're going through and the issues that they're facing with, you know, stations and their other fights and their other contracts, the byproduct will be participation. Because if you engage individuals in one aspect of civic engagement, which is workers' rights, which directly affects them, you know, and I'm not a political scientist like Mr. Damore, but
so you're suggesting that it's just sort of, it's in the DNA of their members now. Is that's kind of what you're suggesting, that they're going to be naturally politically active no matter what Detailer says?
Well, and not to contradict what Mr. Taylor says, you know, the Culinary does an amazing effort in the community, and, you know, for the community, for the Latino community, it's super important. I think it's in the DNA of the community in general, and that has a lot to do with the outreach efforts of 2010, 2008, and even before, you know, the union fights of the early 90s. You know, those people are now naturalized citizens, and they are participating because they, you know, they saw what happens when people participate.
And you know, speaking of the economics, Marco Rubio was in town and over the weekend and sort of took a approach of economics, saying that stumping for Romney, saying he would be the better economic choice over Obama. And I was wondering, David, what do you think the likelihood that Rubio would be the VP pick, and what impact would that have on Latino voters, maybe in Florida, his home state, and then, you know, outside?
Well, my initial thought was that it wasn't going to happen. I think he's got a lot of holes in his biography that would get punched by the Democratic attack machine, as we will. Maybe Romney will change his mind after seeing the poll this morning that showed Obama up in Florida, in that state there. I think that Rubio, you know, he doesn't have the, you know, he's Cuban American as opposed to Mexican American, where most in the West come from. So you have that difference there. You also have this notion he's very young and sort of inexperienced here, and I think the Romney campaign is going to try to avoid the Sarah Palin issue and get someone who is a do-no-harm type at this
boring
point.
White guy. That's actually how a unnamed Romney strategist put it.
You know, I think it would be a bit of a surprise at this point to happen. I think, you know, he's been vetted, but I think the Romney campaign is going to use him this way, deploy him in states where there is a high concentration of Latinos there as a way to not necessarily win the Latino vote, but I think the whole argument for the Republicans this time around is to try to cut the margin down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Dave, Shelley Berkley seems to be lagging a bit behind other Democrats when it comes to the Latino vote. Are voters just getting to know her, although her district, her congressional district, is certainly heavily Latino? Or is Dean Heller, despite policy preferences that include opposition to the DREAM Act, I think he signed on to do away with birthright citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
He's really on the wrong side of a ton of issues, but somehow is he managing to appeal to Latino voters?
Good question, and I have those data, and I've been meaning to analyze them. I got the latest iteration of the Latino decision swing poll, and there is a 10% drop from Obama to Berkeley there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's just geography yet. I'm hoping to do that over the next week, and I'll let you know the answer to that. My guess is it's a familiarity issue, particularly up in northern Nevada, where I think about 20% of the population there is in Washoe is Latino. So maybe a familiarity issue there. I don't know at this point yet. I'll let you know.
Leo, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Mi Familia Vota, we just opened our office in Reno. So we're going to be engaging the Latino community, not just about candidates, but of course about the process. But when Latinos become informed about the issues that they care about, jobs and the economy, about education and healthcare, and the votes that elected officials who are seeking re-election or seeking higher office, when our community finds out who supports the issue that they care about and who doesn't, then they vote, and they vote educatedly, just like any other demographic. The fact that Senator Heller in the House and in the Senate voted against provisions of healthcare and Medicare and all these other issues that concern us and our aging parents, as not just as young Latino voters, because our community is young, but as concerned, you know, members of the community, but also when it comes to immigration, supporting an initiative or conversations to repeal birthright citizenship, that would devastate our community. You have young people who are here, they were born here just like anyone else, and all of a sudden you would take away their rights, that is something that I would doubt any Latino could support. You know, I myself, I don't think that I would be affected because I was naturalized, but my nieces, they were born here, but their parents are not citizens. You know, my sister's a legal resident, and, you know, so what would that mean for my nieces? What would that mean for the future of our community? And I think when candidates are running for office and standing on issues, they need to, especially if they're even concerned with the Latino vote, because that's another issue. Some candidates may not be concerned with the Latino vote, and it is what it is. You know, I wish that they would be, because Latinos aren't a monolithic group. We're not all Democrats. You know, my parents were Republicans for 20 years. And, you know, so I wish the candidates would take the issues that we're concerned with seriously. And Senator Heller standing on the wrong side of birthright citizenship and the DREAM Act and immigration reform and issues that concern our, you know, our children and our families, I wish they would take a second look and take our community into account.
And, Leah, I want to ask you about the GOP in general. A lot was made, obviously, of Sharon Angle's, I think we could say, botched campaign, especially when it comes to Latinos and last time around. And
also Asians.
And Asians. And but also, I mean, people said that the GOP in general, the Republican Party, had to do more in reaching out to Latinos and get out there. And I was just wondering if what you're seeing on the ground in terms of, is the party in general doing a better job of reaching out and communicating with Latinos?
You know what? I really do think that they are. And I think that there's a genuine effort on the ground, at least, that we do see, and that's great. But Republicans and Democrats and any elected official, they're going to have to stand on what their values are, what their beliefs are. You know, do they support our children? Do they support the education, the health care, and the prosperity of our children? Do they support us as, you know, the working class? Do they support jobs, the economy? Do they support providing some sort of relief or some sort of option and deliverables for the housing market and for our parents? Do they believe in Social Security and Medicare and health care for our aging parents? You know, our community is diverse, and, you know, we welcome, as Mi Familia Vota, again, we are nonpartisan, and we welcome any genuine and you know, specific interests from either political party or any candidate to take our issues seriously. That's all our community wants. We want to be treated with respect, and we want politicians, candidates, and political parties to start understanding that our community is here, we're paying attention, we're watching, we're listening. So if you have a Democrat who's out there paying lip service to the community, we will listen and we will watch, and people may not vote for you.
So it sounds like a Spanish language website's not going to get it done. Real quickly, I just, before we go, I just want to forecast here, Dave, and then you, Leo, what portion of the Nevada electorate will be Hispanic?
Ooh, I'd say about 16%.
16, Leo?
You know, the hard work that we're doing and the work that we're going to do to make sure that Latinos participate is going to get us as close to that number as possible. So I'll try to deliver for David.
All right. We'd like to thank our guest, Leo Morriata. He's the Nevada director of La Familia Vota, and Dave DeMore, UNLV political scientist. Thanks to our producer, Steven Zeller. My co-host is Tovin Lepan. Tune in next week for KUNV's Neon Eden.